From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of October 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. I'll bet that yesterday you did not get an opportunity to listen or read Darrell Good's weekly outlook, as it references what he appears to believe a very confusing grain stocks report the last time around. It's a good listen, and we'll have it in its entirety today during the Closing Market Report. And then we'll talk about the Farm Bill for next year. The 2012 iteration of the policy is being written right now in Congress and across this land. Nick Paulson, Farm Policy Specialist from the University of Illinois, will have his take on how the 2012 season will lay out for farm policy in the Midwest and around the nation. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago at the CME Group on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished sharply higher. December wheat up 49 and a quarter cents, a settlement price at $6.60 and 3/4. Next year's July, 45 and a quarter higher at $7.28 and a quarter. The hard red July in Kansas City for the winter wheat at $7.61 and a quarter, up 42 and 3/4. Back at the corn pit in Chicago, December futures $6.45, up the 40-cent trading limit. March futures $6.57 and a half, up the limit 40 higher. May at $6.64 and 3/4, up the 40-cent limit, and July up the limit as well at $6.69 and a quarter. December of next year 28 and a half cents higher to settle at $6.75 and 3/4 of a cent in the corn pit. November bean futures $12.35 and a half, 58 higher. January at $12.46 and a quarter, up 57 and a half. And the May futures $12.55, 57 and a quarter higher. May at $12.61 and a quarter, up 55 and three quarters. July $12.69, up 55 and a half cents. December oat futures up 15 at $3.39. October bean meal at $12.20, higher $3.16.90. The settlement price bean oil at $51.95, up $2.09. Live cattle futures on the day finished the nearby contract at $121.62 and a half, and the December up $1.27 and a half. November feeders unchanged at $143.12 and a half. Lean hogs at $86.77 and a half, 97 and a half cents higher for the December. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. November crude oil futures, $85.98 a barrel, up 57 cents. Ethanol at $2.63, 11 cents higher. Natural gas at $3.61, up 7 cents. Heating oil up 9.5 cents for the day at $2.91 and 3 tenths of a cent. And the gold futures at $1,659.70, settled $9.90 lower. The Dow now at 11,394, just about 39 points lower. The dollar at 77.5, up 0.08. The CRB at 310.51, that's Commodity Research Bureau Index, up 1.85 for the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says that this afternoon skies will be partly sunny, a high near 82 degrees, south-southeast winds at about 8 miles an hour. That's for this afternoon. Then tonight, mostly cloudy, a low 53, southeast winds at about 7 miles an hour. Wednesday, a 50% chance of showers, a few thunderstorms in the area. After 1 p.m., partly sunny, a high near 74 degrees, south-southeast winds at 6 to 9 tomorrow. And tomorrow night, showers and thunderstorms likely. It'll be cloudy, a low 55 degrees, southeast winds at 6 miles an hour. They'll become west-southwest with a chance of precip in Urbana-Champaign area set at 70% for Wednesday night. On Thursday, a chance of showers will continue. That before 1 in the afternoon, central time. Mostly cloudy, a high of 68 degrees, west-northwest winds at 7 to 17. Chance of precip tomorrow at 40%, or Thursday that is. And then Thursday night, partly cloudy, a low of 48. Friday, sunny and breezy, 64. Friday night, clear and 45. Saturday, sunny and 66. And Saturday night, mostly clear and a low of 50 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour and we talk with Don Day of Day Weather.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. On the phone line with us, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. What a wild and woolly day. Why did it start on its way up? And I suppose it may have finished up with fear of a war with Iran, but we'll talk about that in a bit, too.
You know, Todd, we expected a little bit of short covering today going into the report, but we expected it more or less how it opened and being range-bound quite a bit lower in how we traded. A lot of us were shocked that we saw as much fund activity coming in the day before a report today as we did see. I mean, we saw tremendous buying by the funds, probably some commercial short covering, all starting with what we thought early was the idea of maybe a little Chinese buying sneaking in here down in Argentina and possibly sulking around the American corn market because the ethanol plants out here continuing to pay over basis for corn right now, if anywhere from 5 to 20 over. So, you know, those were some of the things we thought we might see a little bit of buying from, but nothing like what it turned into as the day went on.
Yeah, 2 o'clock Central Time, the time of this report on a Tuesday afternoon, probably should take a moment to update what's been happening in Washington, D.C., where the Justice Department says it has disrupted an Iranian government plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the United States. The Attorney General, Eric Holder, says two people have been charged in New York and one admitted his role in the plot. Holder says the plot represents a flagrant violation of the U.S. and international law. He says the U.S. is committed to holding Iran accountable. I did hear him say that directly in the press conference this afternoon, so there will be lots of drum beating and wondering what that exactly means, but I'm sure we'll hear out of the president's office at some point today what that means. But usually when we get that kind of happening as just a rumor in the marketplace, things do move higher in hopes of hoarding maybe a little of the agricultural commodities in front of whatever catastrophe may or may not happen, I suppose.
You know, that's very possible, Todd. We saw nothing of that until I just talked to you here right now. So I'm going to plead stupidity or lack of information on commenting a lot on that one.
Well, I do have a question as that relates to the marketplace, because the marketplace was sharply higher on the eve of a USDA report, one that set direction for the whole year last year, and now we're up 40 cents, the limit higher in the corn futures, and bean futures are up nearly the limit as well.
That's what's so terribly surprising as to all of this happening today. One of the floor traders circulated a report saying how he did not believe the estimates, the Dow Jones estimates as to from all the other traders as to where they thought things were going to be. He thinks they're a lot lower. That come out mid-morning after we'd already started the rally and was circulated a lot through the floor. There was rumors of China possibly securing some Argentine corn that helped push the market up, and one news wire that said there was mention, but the Chinese individual couldn't be quoted for sure, as that they would be okaying the Syngenta, a number that, of course, had not been okayed for Chinese import as of this point in time. And they thought that that was possibly some of the things we're looking. There's also seasonals in the soybeans that point to after you proceed past a certain percentage of harvest in about this date, we generally tend to bottom soybeans out. But the amount of fund buying today, the day before report, is very, very unusual for fund managers.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch and see how it opens this evening and what plays out at 7:30 tomorrow. Thanks so much, Wayne.
Thanks, Doc.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. You can hear him again on our website at willag.org and read our latest there on our weekend newsletter and get a text from us tomorrow morning at 7:30 with the numbers from USDA. You're listening listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Yesterday afternoon, University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good released his weekly outlook on the Farm Doc Daily website. There's a podcast there and a printed version. He's a bit perturbed, I think, by what's been happening with the grain stocks report over the last year. It's a good listen, and we'll bring it to you in its entirety today, right here on the Closing Market Report.
The USDA's estimate of the September 1 inventory of old crop corn is old news, but there are ongoing questions surrounding the quarterly stocks estimates. Those estimates have not been well anticipated since June 2010. The June 1, 2010 estimate of stocks was surprisingly small and implied feed and residual use during the previous quarter that was too large. The September 1, 2010 estimate of stocks was larger than anticipated based on the level of June 1 stocks, but seemed to correct for that small estimate in June. The implied feed and residual use for the 2010-11 marketing year based on that estimate was reasonable. The December 1, 2010 and March 1, 2011 estimates of stocks were marginally smaller than expected and implied a high rate of feed and residual use during the first half of the marketing year. In contrast, the June 2011 estimate of stocks was much larger than expected and implied a very dramatic slowdown in the rate of feed and residual use during the third quarter of the marketing year. Unlike in the previous year, the September 1 stocks estimate this year did not correct for the large June estimate, but instead compounded the implications of that June estimate. Implied feed and residual use of corn during the final quarter of the marketing year was unreasonably small, and implied use for the last half of the year that was a third less than in the same period a year earlier. Such a large decline seems unreasonable. The estimate of large September 1 stocks also appears to be at odds with the ongoing very strong corn basis. Explanation offered for the surprisingly large September 1 stocks include the possibility that the 2010 corn crop was underestimated and or the amount of corn used for ethanol production had been overestimated. If correct, either of these explanations would result in a larger calculation for feed and residual use and might make sense if the September stocks estimate was the only one available for the year. However, neither explanation is consistent with the level of stocks on December 1, 2010 or March 1, 2011. In addition, the size of errors implied by these explanations would have to be very large to result in a reasonable calculation of feed and residual use for the year. Some speculate that stocks of the newly harvested crop were included in the estimate of old crop inventories. Such an inclusion would require unique reporting errors by survey respondents, and those errors, once again, would have to be very large to result in a reasonable calculation of feed and residual use in the last quarter of the year. The implied low level of use last year complicates the forecast for the current year. Feed use might be expected to decline due to a combination of unchanged hog numbers, declines in broiler chick placements, declining cattle feedlot inventories starting in early 2012, and a stable supply of distillers grain. But will use really decline from the extremely low level implied for this past year? Corn prices declined after the release of the September 1 stocks estimates, but were already under pressure as a result of concerns about U.S. and world economic conditions. In addition, the corn market has been influenced by reports of better-than-expected yields. It is yet to be determined if better-than-expected translates into higher-than-forecast. The USDA will release new corn production and consumption forecasts on October 12. The recent decline in corn prices has resulted in profitable margins for almost all users, suggesting that prices are low enough to encourage an increase in consumption. The USDA's October reports will provide a new benchmark for evaluating consumption. After that, weekly estimates of exports, ethanol production, and broiler placements will provide information to gauge the pace of consumption relative to projections and to judge the price level.
That was U of I Ag economist Daryl Goode from his weekly outlook. You can hear it all again on our website at willag.org or on the farmdocdaily.illinois.edu website. Your choice. Either way, important information from the Ag Economist right here on this campus. Speaking of agricultural economists, Nick Paulson is one in the College of ACES and follows farm policy for the U of I. I spoke with him last week about the budget setting process and how it might impact farm policy, in particular the 2012 iteration of the Farm Bill. He has some ideas. We'll hear them in a moment. The Farm Bill discussions have taken place under the budget acts in the past, for instance, just prior to the 1996 presidential election. That bill was called Freedom to Farm. The federal budget was a big issue then, and farmers were told, we're going to deal with your cuts now, and we'll take everybody else up after the election in November. This year it's different. The election cycle's further away, and the super committee is making cuts to everyone. Nick Paulson follows farm policy for the University of Illinois.
Well, I think the biggest concern going into the 2012 Farm Bill is obviously the budget situation we're faced with. And you can argue that we've gone into other farm bills with threats or discussions about budget cuts, but it really does seem more real this time. So we do have the super committee set up to find $1.5 trillion to cut from the being contributed to reducing the deficit, and we've had the administration's proposal come out now that in terms of agricultural spending cuts, they're outlining about $30 billion over a 10-year period in reductions to farm programs.
Admittedly, says Paulson, the proposal from the Obama administration on how to achieve $30 billion in cuts is broad, but there are some very clear directives.
Basically, it would be achieved through eliminating the direct payment program and then also some kind of very vague cuts to crop insurance. So not by vague, I mean not very well defined in terms of how the total has to be, how the cuts have to be made, but some cuts to the crop insurance program to come up with the remainder of that $30 billion over 10 years.
The elimination of direct payments isn't likely to surprise anyone who follows farm policy. It's been on the list, even for farmers, for more than a year.
In your reference to the commodity groups, I guess, is the label I'll put on them. I'll use national corn growers and even the cotton growers as the example here. I wouldn't say that I wouldn't necessarily use the word agreed to the fact that direct payments are going to be eliminated, but I think they've shown a willingness to let that program kind of expire on the condition that other programs will be strengthened. So either through a strengthened crop insurance program to provide a stronger safety net or just as strong of a safety net as we have now, or through modifications to ACRE, which both groups are kind of proposing in terms of strengthening that program, in terms of using some of those direct payment savings to make the safety net itself stronger.
Right. But there are always political trade-offs. And while corn growers and cotton growers might like a stronger crop insurance program, others, wheat growers out west, well, they tend to like disaster assistance programs, which brings us to Senator Max Baucus from Montana. He sits on the super committee tasked with making the cuts.
So Baucus is really the only member of the super committee with, agricultural experience or agricultural interests. And he does come from a region where disaster payments are arguably historically more important and probably a higher priority than the crop insurance programs, which are really, more popular in the Midwest and the southern cotton growing states.
Again, that's Nick Paulson from the University of Illinois speaking. He's a farm policy specialist. The question then is, where does the political environment in Washington and farm country lead farm policy? Paulson has some ideas.
I mean, I really think that we're to the point now where we can safely say that direct payments are probably off the table. That's not really maybe making a very bold statement. In terms of the crop insurance program, how they define cuts to a program like that, where actual outlays for that program are going to be so dependent on where commodity prices go in any given year. So really the only kind of factor that they can play with there is subsidy rates. But to be honest, I don't really see, in terms of when they talk about budget cuts and baselines, that ultimately is not going to have that big of an impact on how well the crop insurance program operates from the producer's perspective. A lot of that is just, again, the baselining and the budgeting process that doesn't completely line up with the amount of money that will actually be spent in the future. So budgeting is very far from what the actual outlays will be, which is really what matters to the farmers that use the crop insurance program.
Well, that's good news for those rooting for the continuation of crop insurance. But still, this Farm Bill policy setting cycle is very odd. Remember, this bill is usually updated every 4 to 5 years, and there's a lot of wrangling and jostling among the farm groups to help guide the process. USDA generally sits on the sideline other than to provide financial and historical analysis. That doesn't look to be the case this farm bill season, says Paulson.
The thing I keep hearing is that USDA is actually going to be more directly involved in writing this farm bill than other previous farm bills. Beyond that, again, I think it's just the environment in which the bill is being written, where there really isn't a great argument or justification to continue programs that provide income support. So this bill is really going to be written, I think, going to have to be written from a safety net or a risk management perspective to be able to come up with any good arguments for agriculture to keep some of the funding levels that they've received in previous bills.
Well, unlike 1996, when farmers were asked to take a cut and promised everyone else would follow after the election, this year, it appears the Supercommittee may wield the budget acts more broadly. Although, there's not all that much time between now and next summer, and that's just about how the budget cutting happened in the mid-1990s. The other big agricultural backdrop issue is the WTO. Now, trade, as related to the 2012 Farm Bill discussions, bothers Nick Paulson.
Trade issues are gonna play out depending on what actual outlays are. So that's, you know, again, I can't really emphasize it enough. There's the budgeting side to this, which is going into creating the legislation and meeting the deficit reduction or the budget cut targets that we have to meet. But then actual outlays are a totally different story. That's one of the nice things about direct payments is that the budget and the outlays line up because of the way the program's designed. For programs like acre and crop insurance, those things can be totally different.
The direct payments introduced with Freedom to Farm in the 1990s do not count in the WTO discussions. Everything else, for the most part, comes with potential penalties attached. Washington could simply decide to pay that price. It did so not very long ago when Brazil won a WTO case against the United States, and rather than changing the farm bill, Washington agreed to pay Brazil and said, "We'll get to it in 2012. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. We'll say so long now to some of our radio stations. For the rest of you, stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You can always hear that if you'd like on our website at willag.org or the mobile site at m.willag.org.
It's National Angel Food Cake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1796, marks the traditional date for the creation of the metric system. In 1817, Christophorus Spallet was born, a Dutch meteorologist. He was among the first to observe that the wind blows at right angles to the atmospheric pressure gradient. In 1892, Earl Dixon was born. He invented Band-Aids for his wife, who had frequent kitchen accidents, cutting or burning herself. He worked as a buyer for Johnson & Johnson, who soon began manufacturing his idea. In 1913, a dike was blown up by the U.S. engineers to complete the final stage of the Panama Canal, and the waters of the Pacific met the waters of the Atlantic. By the way, President Woodrow Wilson signaled the explosion, pressing a button in the White House, which sent a telegraph signal to Panama to trigger the dynamite charge. In 1929, Elijah McCoy died, a Canadian-born American inventor. He held a number of patents for the automatic lubrication of machinery, especially steam engines used in factories, railway locomotives, and ocean ships. And in 1933, Waldo L. Seaman received a patent on a method for making plasticized PVC, now known as vinyl. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, is here to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest. We had some gray skies early today, and then around 10 o'clock, things started to clear out. What can we expect, and is there really rainfall out there somewhere for us in the near future?
Yeah, we're going to see a little bit of a flip-flop in the weather pattern. We've lately enjoyed a fairly quiet stretch of weather that's been good for some harvest operations in many areas of the nation's midsection. But we're going to start to see a little bit more in the way of shower and thunderstorm activity. In fact, we're going to see it pick up in the Midwest and Corn Belt, especially during the day tomorrow. It's not a terribly big system. The cooler, windy conditions and showers will overspread most of the Midwest tomorrow, and we'll probably hang on through at least early Friday. And then we see a weather pattern that is going to be cooler and probably wet again in many areas of the Midwest, with probably a little bit of a larger, more potent system. Certainly, it's going to have much colder air with it. That's going to arrive early to mid-next week. Dare I say, there'll be some areas of the Great Lakes and Midwest that might even see a few flakes of snow with that system.
Sounds like mid-October, and if we get cold enough, eventually we'll be able to have an Indian summer, although it seems like that's getting to be less of a, that's getting to be a remote process at this point. We're late enough in the season. Take a look out to the southwest. Tell me about those rainfalls that they recently had, and then what kind of potential they have for ending a drought over the long term.
Well, one storm, unfortunately, is not going to end that drought. They need a pattern that's going to be a little bit more consistent. Right now, I certainly do see some opportunities for portions of southwestern Texas to get rained on again. We see that opportunity in the next, not in a short term, but out week 10 days or so. But even with rain in the forecast and the recent rains, they're going to need a pattern that's going to be consistently wet. I don't see that. Certainly, I think the drought is going to ease some, and there's going to be some help, and I don't see them getting back to the hot, dry weather that was so prevalent in the summer season. So things are looking better for them, but it's a long road they got to hoe.
The growing season is beginning in the southern hemisphere. Please take me through South America and what you see in the nations that are primary corn and soybean producers.
Well, it looks pretty good. They're going to be looking at good chances for rainfall over the next week across most of the key growing areas of South America, Brazil in particular. Argentina will do pretty well with rainfall in many of the key areas. Now, temperatures about average, maybe a little cooler than normal.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
I don't think so.
Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You can always hear him again on our website at willag.org or on the mobile website at m.willag.org. It's all part of the service from WILL, Illinois Public Media, and agriculture here at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.